Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:21 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. And I thought I would kick off today with an interesting development. When we look at the Black Lives Matter website, then we're presented with a couple of different things. But the first that I would like to draw anyone's attention to is when you click on Donate, and obviously it gives you a range of options, but then it also takes you down to the fact that the contribution rules, and they go to Act Blue Charities. So one has to ask the question whether the entire Black Lives Matter movement is a front for raising capital for the Democratic Party's wish to try and get people elected. Now, if that is indeed the case, then it raises some important points about the willingness of the Trump administration to continue to boost stimulative measures. There has already been a certain amount of reticence about increasing fiscal stimulus because the additional unemployment benefits have made it more appetizing to be unemployed than to be employed in a number of lower income states. Now, the determination about whether there is going to be additional fiscal stimulus or not is a very big question. And the total reliance of the stock market today on continued availability of additional stimulative measures is incredibly important. So the Russell 2000 has paused in the region of the 200-day moving average. It has pulled back by an equal sized reaction compared to that in early to mid May, and also from late March to early April. So far it's an equal sized reaction. However, we can also look at it and think that this overhead area of resistance around the 1500 level is a meaningful one, and that there is the potential for additional resistance in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range, and that it has now put in a short-term higher low from the region of the 200-day moving average. So we're at a rather interesting decision point. When we look at it on the daily chart again, then this is a very narrow margin for error, because within the current 100-point range between the region of the 200-day moving average and at the low put in 3 days ago around the 1350 area, then there is the big decision point, because if it falls through the 1350 area, it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's confirmed resistance in the region of the trend mean. It's already confirming potentially that we have a lower high. If, on the other hand, it reverses tomorrow, pushes back above the trend mean, back above the 1500 point level, then it'll look increasingly like a failed break below the 1500 level, and it will be resuming its uptrend. There is the world of difference between the performance of small caps, which generally tend to be more influenced by the domestic economy, and the outperformers in the technology sector. And the Nasdaq 100 closed today in positive territory, back within 18 points of its the big psychological 10,000 level. I'm in two minds whether this is another bite at the cherry to short, or whether we're going to see additional upside. And I don't have the same degree of confidence in the short position today that I did 2 weeks ago, or it wasn't 2 weeks ago, it was last week. But there is certainly a lot of additional considerations here, because if the Republican Party draw the conclusion that additional fiscal stimulus is more of an aid to their Democrat opponents than it is to their own chances of getting re-elected, it's going to break the bipartisan attitude towards stimulative measures that has been the hallmark of the movement so far, or the willingness to supply liquidity so far. If, on the other hand, they decide that it is in their interests to continue to stimulate, then that is likely to be forthcoming, and we will see additional upside on the stock market. I thought that one thing that might be particularly relevant is the fact that Arizona and Florida are both swing states, and the fact that you have cases rising in both does support the view that there will be additional stimulative measures, because they're both battlegrounds which need to be won by whoever is likely to win the election in November. But unfortunately, what this does introduce is a degree of politicization to the whole argument about monetary and fiscal stimulus. And that's an uncertainty. When we then think about the VIX index, it did bounce really quite impressively last week, and it has given up most of that advance now, but it is still holding the 30 level, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs from that peak back in March. In order for a true risk-on rally to resume, we would have to see the VIX index coming back below the trend mean, and that might be something, that might be just a bridge too far in the short term. Now, when we look at other markets, the FTSE in the UK has also steadied from an equal-sized reaction. This 500-point decline is not dissimilar to the pullback that we saw in late April, or indeed in late March. The 6,000 level has to hold, though, if that sequence of higher reaction lows is to remain intact. It's a similar condition for the FTSE 250, and I just need to type in the ticker correctly. But we can also see that there is the clear sequence of higher reaction lows. But the majority of the overextension relative to the trend mean has now been unwound, and we haven't yet seen a meaningful pullback. Of course, it is all contingent on continued availability of additional liquidity measures. And I think that is less of a question in the UK than it is in the USA, because the Johnson administration has got just clear runway to engage in as much stimulative action as is required, and not least because the UK still is battling the decision about when to end the lockdowns, how fast to do so, and then measuring the repercussions of various decisions that have been made. So there's still the potential for a great deal of uncertainty. Now, when we look at, for example, Germany, there was hundreds of cases announced today at a meatpacking factory, and that hasn't done anything to really damage the potential for the DAX to continue to advance. It is one of those indices that is back above its trend mean. It's back inside the range that engaged between 2017 and early 2020. But we certainly have a short-term overbought condition. We've had a cracking advance over the last 3 months, and this is equally being powered by liquidity. The Nikkei, having risen over 1,000 points yesterday, was mildly negative in here today, but it is also steadying from the region of the trend mean. So these are positive developments. Indices that have been able to sustain moves back above their respective trend means give us a very clear touchstone in the context of a potential area of support. As long as they're holding those areas of support, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I also thought that the Australian index, having had a relatively similar sized pullback, is also noteworthy. Now, the big question is whether it is going to be able to push back above the trend mean. Then we have the fact that the Australian dollar has had one of the most impressive rebounds. It is also back above its trend mean. and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs from early 2018. So it has clearly now broken the medium-term downtrend. We have got the clear potential that the answer to the answer that is most likely to be adopted by governments all over the world is infrastructure development. They like infrastructure development at the best of times, and they probably like it even more at the worst of times. It's the kind of thing that creates jobs, creates economic activity, and also creates pieces of infrastructure that have got growth-enhancing characteristics well into the future. So it's obviously a clear thing that the vast majority of political parties are going to get behind. We are still at a point, though, where the industrial metals are still really quite weak, but it does bring us to the point that isn't it usually when commodity prices are low that new use cases evolve for them? That's economics 101. When the value of an economically important vital resource drops, then new uses emerge for it. That's certainly the case with natural gas, where the price has been really quite weak for a really quite prolonged period of time, and now new use cases are emerging for it. It is cheaper than coal, so natural gas-fired power stations are increasingly taking over, and then we have the evolution of hydrogen fuel cells as well. And natural gas prices are back in the region of their lows following a rather dynamic decline over the course of the last 3 weeks. Oil prices were in positive territory in here for most of the day, but gave it up in the latter portion of the session. This still looks like a first step above the base, and as long as it is holding that $35 level, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging. Now, when we then think about what's going on in China, we have growing numbers of cases in Beijing. There is likely to be additional lockdown measures to try and contain it. The stock market there has done practically nothing at all for more than a year. It's been ranging below the 4,500 point level for nearly 5 years. There is obviously some support measures in place to support prices. That is, I think, one of the reasons why the renminbi has been weakening over the course of the last few years, but it was steady at least in here today. When we look at this, though, on a longer-term basis, it does look like the renminbi is going to weaken further, and there is not much appetite in China for additional strength in the currency. Then when we look at the euro, it was in negative territory in here today, but I really don't think that this looks like anything other than some consolidation. We had a very meaningful move from 108 to 114 in a very short period of time. It's in the region of a previous area of resistance, but I would now anticipate that the region of the trend mean is going to offer support, and that we're now in a more bullish environment. The simple fact of the matter is that the USA is responsible for half, or perhaps even more than half, of all the stimulus in the world, and that is something that should take a toll on the currency. At the moment, there is obviously deflationary forces that are clearly making headlines. Velocity of money has collapsed. It is starting to recover. It's nowhere near the level of activity that we had back in January. Then we have the fact that there's still very high unemployment, and that commodity prices are still low, that economic activity is going to take time to recover. So all of those factors are likely to contribute to deflationary forces. When we look at food commodities, corn prices have pulled back meaningfully in March and April and have been rather slow to rebound, and are really just steadying from the lower side of a six-year range, despite the fact that there has been speculation about how many soybeans the Chinese might buy. The price is still in the region of the lows over the last 6 years, so there hasn't been a meaningful rally here either. So we don't really have a lot of inflationary pressure yet. But when you talk about a $10 trillion stimulus package and the potential for it to increase further, then one has to start to question what happens when velocity of money does start to pick back up. Eventually, and I think there is a cause-effect relationship here, that the quantity of money being printed, the amount of liquidity being poured into the market, is going to continue to increase until they get the growth figures they want and until velocity of money picks back up. But how on earth are they going to be able to remove the liquidity? We had the taper tantrum following the first periods of quantitative easing. We had quantitative tightening in 2018 and early 2019, and that certainly caused a revolution. Now, when we look at synchronized monetary and fiscal stimulus, how is that possibly going to be unwound? And when velocity of money picks back up, against a background where the market has been flooded with liquidity, then that creates inflationary pressures. So it's not a consideration for now. It's a consideration for later. Then when we think about the gold price, it's been ranging now below 1800 for the last 2.5 months. But I think the most important thing is that it ranged below the 1800 point level for most of 2012 and part of 2011 as well. And this is a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance coming through, considering it was a big psychological Rubicon. Now, I think in order to really demonstrate to the vast majority of investors that we are in fact back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment, it will have to sustain a move above 1800. But it's probably going to take some time. And it may take as long as is required for inflationary pressures to, in fact, start to come back to the fore. I rather suspect that it's at that point silver will begin to outperform gold again, and it's not quite there yet. The price has been steadying in the region of the trend mean, but it is still below the $20 level, and it has been trading below $20 for about 6 years, and I'm deliberately ignoring the failed break above 20 in 2016. When silver eventually breaks out, it's likely to coincide with much more interest in the precious metals sector. Then, of course, I think one of the more important charts out there today is the 30-year Treasury, and yields were tighter in here today, but the sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 10 weeks, or perhaps 8 weeks more accurately, has continued to hold. If we see the yield pushing back above the 2% level, then I think that will be an indication that we are back in a more inflationary environment. 10-year TIPS are still trading in negative yield territory, and there is no succession of higher reaction lows here. The last time we had TIPS trading at these levels was 2012 and 2013, and subsequently we had a very meaningful pop back above zero. But we're still at a point today where investors are willing to bet that we are still in a deflationary environment. So when TIPS do push back above zero, then that will also be confirmation that we're back more in an environment where investors want to hedge against inflationary pressures. Now, when we think about the Indian market, they've lost 20 soldiers to the conflict are, I guess, the skirmishes with Chinese soldiers on their northern border. But the index continues to pause here around the psychological 10,000 level. The banking sector in India continues to be a lead indicator. It hasn't quite yet been able to push back above the 25,000 level. I think when it can eventually do that, then that will be confirmation of additional investor interest in the Indian market. But I do also think that what happens in terms of the US dollar and its, I guess, its ability to hold on to that 96 level is going to be a significant arbiter of interest in emerging markets. Because generally speaking, gold rallies and interest in emerging markets both benefit from a weaker dollar. The dollar has been among the strongest currencies in the world between about 2018 and quite recently. And if it were to break down, then that would, on the one hand, certainly help to bolster the potential for additional upside from gold, but also from emerging markets, because emerging markets are one of the few places in the world today where it's possible to pick up a decent yield in fixed income, but obviously the currency needs to be in one's favor, and a weaker dollar would certainly help in that regard. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.